This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
May is feeling ticked off and impatient, at least the people around her are. Simmons has a neck condition. They call her Yo-Yo because she will always bounce back. Something's different. Hydra is 40 years ahead of schedule. Where the F is Enoch, and what the F is Trout in the Milk? Sometimes you punch the bag, and sometimes the bag punches you back. Am I right? We are talking ABC's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7, Episode 5 of Trout in the Milk. The AfterBuzz After Show starts right now, and I'm, of course, joined by my illustrious panel. All the way to the right of the Zoom of the channel, Christian Blatt is in the building.
You know, when I was in college, I went by the nickname Trout in the Milk, and it was very jarring to hear that phrase again.
Well, that's because you went to college in the 50s, Christian, so I can understand that. And Rachel Radner, author.
Hey, everyone.
Author is amongst us today. You're a little bit more cultured than all of us. How are you, Rachel?
Oh, I'm doing well. I did have to look up that phrase, I'm not going to lie, but it's
Is it a real phrase, or is Sousa trying to pull a fast one on us? Okay.
You've never heard Trout in the Milk? Drake used it. It's actually the name of the last Drake album. Trout in the Milk. Trout in the Milk. Don't you wear silk? Trout in the Milk. It's actually very good. It's actually a very good thing. Of course, I'm Tehran. I will be hosting, as I host all things comic books, basically on AfterBuzz, amongst many other things. And Ryan,
God's
is in the
plan.
Back. That's our producer today. What's up, Ryan?
Yo, God's plan.
Thank speaking. Thank you, Ryan. We don't need
God's
you to talk.
Plan.
We just need you. Just hit the button, bro. That's what you do. We're gonna break down this episode as us, and we're talking ABC's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7, Episode 5, A Trout in the Milk. Break it down as General Rick Stoner. Let's talk about General Rick Stoner. Actually, changes in the timeline. I'd like to talk about that first. Then General Rick Stoner. Then Wilfred Malik is alive. Project Insight. That seems to be the thing we need to get into. S.H.I.E.L.D. Bar. We go to the bar. S.H.I.E.L.D. Base. We get to the base. Bet you didn't see that coming. Deke returns the status quo like a boss. Mac makes a decision. And Daniel Whitehall. All that, and of course, we're going to talk about our news and gossip, our special segment, Agents of Should, things that they should have done, and we're going to get some predictions out of this. What were your overall thoughts on this week's episode, ABC's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 7, Episode 5, A Trout in the Milk, Rachel Radner?
I loved the references to Agent Carter. I'm a huge Peggy Carter stan, and I always will be. And the fact that these past two episodes, and I know I wasn't here last week, you know, I kind of had an anniversary to celebrate, so sorry I couldn't make it. But last week when we had the black and white episode and we learned Daniel Sousa was going to be in this season, which we had kind of guessed based on that Instagram post, I'm just really happy that we have Daniel Sousa. He's gone with them into the future. And we are getting all of these Agent Carter references, as well as early Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. references too, especially with Daniel Whitehall.
I agree. I didn't even notice. Were there some Agent Carter references?
There were, yeah.
No way. There, you think? Christian, what were your thoughts overall?
Well, most importantly, I want to know, where can I get one of those stylish, comic book accurate S.H.I.E.L.D. jumpsuits? I think we all need them for next week's show. I will pay for the expedited shipping, and I loved seeing that. And, you know, sort of as we were talking about last week, I like the way that each episode, and specifically each time period that they go to, has its own feel. I loved the opening sequence, the 70s, very Quinn Martin production style opening. And I loved the feel of the 70s. That's why I'm showing off my 70s hair for everyone.
I see it.
Just want to make sure that everyone watching sees it. before it goes away. But I thought it was great. And anytime you put Patrick Warburton on network television, you've got my attention.
You've got a winner. I have to agree. This was a great episode. It was fun. Was it even the theme music that they changed up and how they started it off and had the 70s feel and all that? And of course, the concept of trout in the milk, if you don't understand what it means, it specifically is a reference to when milk was delivered by the farmer itself. And instead of being able to deliver a pure product, they would try to water it down by dipping it in the stream. And every now and then a trout would just get into the milk. And even though you didn't see the farmer do it, the trout being in the milk was the best circumstantial evidence of all time. So that's the whole concept of circumstantial evidence. And we see a lot of that in this episode, because that's what we're deciding is the foundation that the Chromacons are helping Hydra. And clearly it only took half a second before they were like, yes, the Chromacons are helping Hydra. So someone on the writing staff probably just heard that phrase and was like, we gotta throw that in. My dad says it all the time. Let's start with changes in the timeline. We have a couple changes in the timeline. Freddie was supposed to die. Freddie's still there. Nathaniel was supposed to die. Nathaniel's still there. Project Insight is 40 years ahead of time. Launch day is 1976. Nathan's around. And of course, May can't feel anything. Coulson's alive. I don't know what's going on. What do you think about all these changes in the timeline, ripples and waves?
Well, it's always confusing because, you know, the way that we are conditioned to think about time travel from other fandoms and other media is different than what they did in Avengers Endgame. So you do wonder, you know, depending on decisions that are made, you know, is it going to impact your own life? And the fact that the Chronicoms are just, you know, they're all about, well, they're Endgame and they don't care what they do to the timeline. And Billie Jean Girl in the chat mentions Billie Jean Girl 24. Sorry for giving an incomplete.
Yeah, because Billie Jean Girl 23 totally.
No, hates this show. And honestly doesn't like Rachel. I don't know why Billie Jean Girl 23 doesn't like Rachel.
That's we a do. Good point. I asked.
It was, yeah.
But the thing that was that definitely, you know, perked my ears up was mentioning Bruce Banner on the target list, mm-hmm. you know? The sort of age-old question, do you go back in time and kill baby Hitler? Do you go back in time if you're evil and kill baby Bruce Banner before he's even a baby Hulk? So I think that the severity of what they were doing, the weight of it was felt throughout. And, you know, look, Susan makes a good point. It's like, well, so if everybody's messing up the timeline, why didn't you just let me try and fight it back there? And, you know, I think that in the moment, the idea was we got to take you out of it because we didn't know. So I think that everybody asks some good questions, but Deke decided to take the timeline into his own hands for sure. So that was very intriguing.
Well, I mean, did he take it into his own hands, or did he just correct and rectify the timeline?
No,
Rachel,
true.
You were about to say.
Yeah, no, just that right now I am very much enjoying this season. But I do feel that we're getting kind of pulled back and forth here. And I'm feeling a little bit of whiplash in the sense that in general, ever since Endgame, when you get time involved, things get a lot messier and a little bit more confusing. And so we know everything that happened with Agent Carter, now Steve Rogers is in the past. And for anyone who has not watched Agent Carter, I just want to say this now, that Daniel Sousa and Peggy were sort of together by the end of season two before the show got canceled. So I have that in the back of my head. And I keep wondering, what is the chunk of time that we're missing between the end of Agent Carter and when we're picking back up with Daniel Sousa? I'm wondering that. Daniel did mention that Peggy Carter was on that list as well with Bruce Banner. So who else is on the list? And also, the Chromacons, I feel like they would already, I'm a little concerned that they are going to have an easier time picking off people than we're imagining right now. Now, fortunately, I mean, this is the end of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I'm hoping that, hoping that we get more answers and we're not left with a bunch of questions by the end of the season, but we're on episode 5 and we haven't even seen Fitz yet. So there's just a lot of going back to the question about everything changing in the timeline, I think it is going to get very messy. And we don't know how this is going to affect people that we're not even seeing right now.
Well, the only person who needs to worry about Fitz is Deke, because if Fitz and Simmons don't fit Simmons, then Deke's mom is never born, right? So you're right. Rachel and I, and even Christian, we've been through a lot of teamy-timey, wobbly-timely stuff, right? We get through this time stuff. Whenever you time travel, it seems nice because we do a suspension of disbelief, but you get too much. At some point, it's like, this just doesn't – now how do you get this far? Because if we're worried about Mac's parents dying, then we should be worrying about a lot of other things that have implications. And every little thing, and if you add in butterfly effect, then we're just all screwed. So we just got to play it, and I guess we got to let it play out. And hopefully we're on episode 5, and this isn't a question we're asking by episode 20. We're not asking the same questions. Let's talk about our main man over here, the general. We get the general, and the general gets to play. What were your thoughts on the general, guys? General Rick Stoner.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet, because the thing is, I mean, May felt him. And so I think that's the new the storytelling technique right now, is if May feels someone and they feel like a good person, then that makes them a good person. But I don't necessarily buy that. I feel like he is going to be a gray area character, and that he might actually be the one to get in their way next. So I don't buy this, you know, facade of him being a good guy.
Yeah, I think he's Hydra, and I think that that's what she sensed, and that's why he was immediately, you know, at first I thought it was kind of funny that he was somebody that goes with the, oh, you're from the future and there's aliens. All right, well, obviously we know what that is.
Yeah, I thought that was like kind of SSTA? Funny. Oh, they're SSTAs? Right. I was like, well,
I love that. But yeah, I think that that's kind of the advantage that that they have, that our team has, because May's like, yeah, this guy's not legit, so let's punch him, you know? So yeah, I don't trust him. And I think that what we learned from Winter Soldier is that virtually everyone at the highest level of S.H.I.E.L.D., except for Nick Fury, and, you know, Coulson was gone by then, but even in Coulson's lifetime, you know, he had no idea either. But we found just how deep Hydra went, where it seems like everybody except Fury. So also, this is an altered timeline. Maybe the Rick Stoner from the original linear, you know, 1976, before all this messed about, maybe he wasn't with Hydra, maybe he is now. So it'll be an interesting reveal, but I will not be surprised if he gives us a great big hell Hydra.
Well, yes, Rachel?
No, just going to add really fast, we get a hint of who this little Ricky guy is with how Daniel Sousa describes him as being a guy who couldn't even tell a mag from a clip. So I feel like that little detail was either introduced so that we knew, oh, okay, this is a character who isn't the brightest, who's going to go along with things and not realize it. It's either that, or Daniel Sousa was telling us this so that we understood that this guy shouldn't be trusted because he does not know what he's doing.
I think that General Stoner is one of my favorite characters right now, just because
blasted him, and you're like, yes, I love him.
I like him. You know what it is? We all like the guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's true. He's the guy. We know the guy. We like that guy. So
I mean, he was the first live action Tick. You know, I mean, who's not to love Patrick Warburton?
Exactly. Like, we liked him. He was just it was good to see him.
He's got a great mustache in this.
Who doesn't like Patrick Warburton? We love that guy. So I like watching him. I also like May punching him out without even waiting. And I agree with Rachel on the fact that this is going to be the storytelling technique, where we push the narrative and move along action based on May felt something. And then, of course, we do get May and Coulson. And that's the thing we need to talk about, because it feels like Coulson, even though Coulson's not a real Coulson, Coulson wants to connect to May again, and May has having a hard time connecting to anyone, including her own self.
Well, and the thing with Coulson is, even though he's an LMD, the way that his conscious mind doesn't necessarily see it that way. Like, yes, he understands he's an LMD and he is different now, but he's also Coulson. And so he can't see May differently. He's still, I'm guessing. I mean, this is Coulson who originally woke up with memories from right after the framework. And at that point, we knew that he did like May. He had deep feelings for her. And in this episode, I feel like we got callbacks to some of that, but it's just very complicated now because how could they ever have a relationship?
Christian's an LMD. Maybe he can explain.
But I also had a little bit of ChromeCon upgrades.
It's different.
And I also have Terminator technology only in my fingers. So, you know, it's a little bit of mix and match. But yeah, I mean, I think that, the idea that the only way you're going to get Melinda May to feel anything is to force other people's emotions on her is very consistent with the character. But I think that 7 years in, we're able to really get a different look at her because we're, you know, just see, you know, she, even undercover, she never would have worn a dress like that before. It was great. I just like visually, she seems different, but also just the way she interacts with everyone, not just Coulson. She's so different than she's been before, but she'll still punch someone when she has to. That part never changes. So I think that the dynamic between the two of them and seeing where it goes, I feel like it, unfortunately, I feel like it won't end well because Coulson always ends up dead, you know? So I feel like that'll be the same for our LMD Coulson.
I want something to happen. I don't care if it's LMD Coulson. Coulson and May deserve to happen. They deserve each other's company and a kiss. And maybe this is the best thing because LMD Coulson doesn't have feelings. And you know what? If it works for Scarlet and Vision, why can't it work for May and Coulson? Let's make that happen. And let's not act like it's a coincidence they keep being teamed up on these missions. That's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence they keep getting teamed up. And I also think, I get it, Sousa was supposed to be with Peggy, but let's not act like Daisy and Sousa isn't something happening too, right?
Yes, oh my God, yes. I thought I wanted Deacon Daisy. No, I want Daniel Sousa and Daisy now.
That's because you're a hater. I still want Deacon Daisy. I want Deacon Daisy.
And my thing is, now that Peggy's with Steve Rogers again, if Steve Rogers did not go back in time, I would have been 150% happy with Peggy and Daniel. But now that she can be with her Steve, I think that Daisy should be with Daniel.
Christian?
Yeah, I did notice some fun interactions between them. And, you know, not just the trout and the milk. I thought, you know, I loved his conversation about the idea of, well, you should have brought a bigger computer. And I don't know, was that phone like product placement that we were supposed to, you know, it felt like on a TV show when they use a search engine that isn't Google and they're like, oh, I don't know. Let's look it up on Bing. Oh, look, Bing tells, and you know, they say the thing and I'm just like, why are we getting such a close look at that phone? It was funny, but I'm like, all right, I feel like I'm being sold to. So, and there was a cell phone commercial in the next break. So, you know, that's why I felt that, but I did like what we saw between them. And yeah, look, I think I know in the chat that Ivan Soto in particular is not a Peggy and Steve fan. But I think for most of us, it's the thing that made the most sense. But prior to Endgame, I liked the idea that Peggy and Sousa ended up together because she was never going to be with Steve. So, Sousa should still be happy. And who's going to be better than Daisy?
Yeah.
Well,
I agree.
First of all, don't talk about my girl like that, Christian.
That's true.
Yeah. Daisy's, and I still like Deke and Daisy. I like Deke and Daisy. And also, let's not act like Sousa's not 206 years old. I'm tired of this Edward Cullen mentality. Just because you look young means you are young. The concept is Sousa is 95 and Daisy's 25, you know, like there's definitely, well, what are they're going to talk about trout in the milk the whole time? And that phone thing, that was the PG version of a dick pic, Christian. He was like, look, Rachel, what were you going to say?
If we're talking technicality, we're in 76, which makes her negative and him what?
Whoa. Like, you just blew my mind there.
I mean, I'm guessing they added some gray to his hair between Agent Carter and when we see him in S.H.I.E.L.D. So in 55. Well,
and if it's July 4th, 1976, I'm 4 months old. So you see, it all comes together.
I am negative 11.
All right, stop showing off.
We're all in that. Sorry, Kristen. We get it. We're negative. Sorry. You're positive. I do want to give a shout out to Haywood WTM, who actually said a lot of callbacks to Winter Soldier and pointed that out. Christian DMZ, of course, in on that chat with Rachel Goodman. If you want to know, that's Rachel Radner, in case you didn't know the name. The name switch.
Rachel Goodman's an actress. Rachel Radner's an author.
Exactly.
Alliteration is much better when you're writing. Let's talk about the concept of Wilfred being alive. Freddie's alive. The kids are alive. What did you think about this whole Malick family just being alive?
Can we talk about how this reminded me of Biff from Back to the Future 2?
Yes.
Especially the moment with Wilfred where he's like, oh, the two dudes, or that they said you would be here, and here you are. I was like, oh, this is totally future Biff from Back to the Future 2 when he's already grown up, or not grown up, gotten older, I should say. It just reminded me, like, obviously this particular episode, I felt like they were definitely paying homage to Back to the Future.
Christian?
Yeah, I think that I think that we see that the S.H.I.E.L.D. team, our modern day present day S.H.I.E.L.D. team is probably going to rectify the timeline. That's probably Deke's plan. It's like, well, these guys shouldn't be alive. So I'm going to take it upon myself to correct it, sort of use a very violent time travel whiteout where we get rid of something that we feel was a mistake. And I think that that's what we're going to see. But it's interesting that, you know, sort of to go back to what we were saying about the inconsistencies in the timeline is that, I mean, it's, you know, the Chronicoms definitely made an adjustment. You know, they're like, well, they keep catching up to us and stopping us. So let's just I don't know, they're not worried. And, you know, one of the things that came up in the chat is this idea of the multiverse, and Deke is a firm believer in that. This is something that Ivan pointed out, which is that, you know, he shouldn't be worried about not existing, but yet he still had that conversation. And to some extent, Max seems to be worried about that as well. So, but we don't really know. And I mean, I think even if someone tells you, don't worry, even if your parents die back in time, you're still going to be alive. Or if your grandparents don't procreate, you're still not going to feel comfortable. Like, well, let me make sure that that happens. You know, I think you're not going to be 100% convinced that somebody's time travel theory is ironclad, you know?
And I honestly feel like they've already hinted that, one, the multiverse, but two, they've kind of hinted that just because your parent or grandparent dies or doesn't exist, doesn't mean that you won't if you already do exist. That's something that feels very different from Back to the Future. So I don't know, like, we don't know that for a fact, but that's kind of what I've been feeling ever since we got involved with time in season 5. But that being said, I feel like with Mac, if you see your parents and you see that they're about to die, I mean, that would have been my first reaction too, whether I was going to exist or not. You see your parents, you're going to want to stop something from happening.
Absolutely.
I think it was more about that.
I've always had a problem with the hero fallacy, which is I need to live in order to save everything. When a lot of superhero movies or storylines would be solved if the hero just said, I'm just going to die. And now I remove the one factor that's the catalyst for all of these situations. So actually, I disagree with Max's decision. Max should have thought of the overall and been like, this is our time to stop it. And we're not giving up our position. If I have to no longer exist in order to have that happen, then that's what I have to do. We saw something very similar with Wilfred, who was willing to give up everything because he just wanted to keep his son. I've never been a believer. If you're going to be this person, I'm saying if you're going to take this role, if you're going to be this person, you're going to sign up for this, then you have to sign up for it all the way. You have to put nepotism aside. If you're saying Hydra is because it's the best for the world and you're trying to say it's not the best for me, then you have to place nepotism to the side and be like, this is what's got to happen. There's actually the scene, I don't know if you've ever watched Usual Suspects, where Kaiser Soze's family is being held hostage by this the Turkish mafia, and they have his family hostage. So Kaiser Soze goes, kills his own family, and then kills all the hostage takers. So it's like, you can't take anything from me. Now, as ruthless of a scene as that is, he is ruthless Kaiser Soze. That is what ruthless is supposed to do. Wilfred Malik ruthless is supposed to be ruthless and say, oh, well, you know what? Then you guys, and I would have bet on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. not taking out the son. Like, that's just not how they're built. So I would have, I personally would have took the chance. And I also don't like how the Chromacons are dressed as if they're Chromacons. Like, they're just dressed like, I would be like, hey, what are those guys wearing? What S&M party are they going to? Why are they dressed like this in the 70s?
I agree with you, Taran. I think that in that moment with Mac and Malik, it kind of shows that, you know, when you're in a position, like, for example, with Wilford, I did not expect him to actually save his son. I mean, I expected he was going to be ruthless and say, nope, go ahead, you got him, whatever, I don't care. Like, not that he didn't care, but just that his power would be more important to him. So I was very shocked.
Thanos did it.
Yeah, Thanos. And, you know, I feel like if Biff had a child, Biff would have done the same thing. Like, that to me is, I mean, not that Wilford was, I feel like he's not quite the ruthless guy that we've seen with other villains. So I guess it kind of makes sense. But I just, there's a little bit of a disconnect for me between the 1931 Wilford versus the two, like, renditions of him that we saw in the middle versus the one who would save his son. It just doesn't feel, he feels either like he's too ruthless or not ruthless enough.
To Tehran's point about sort of the, you know, the hero who's willing to sacrifice himself, that's, I think the biggest problem with that is always that's the person that your audience, whatever your medium is, if it's a viewer or a reader, that's who they're invested in. So it's very rare that you're willing to do that. You know, I mean, it's from a very different universe, but for the first time in my life, I'm reading DC's Crisis on Infinite Earths, and the Barry Allen Flash and Supergirl both end up giving their life for the greater good. And it reminds me of the saying that is used multiple times in Star Trek II, which is the needs of the many outweighing the needs of the few. And it's very hard to make that decision. It's very hard to, well, my parents are going to have to drown, but think about what that's going to do for society. Now, I think if the only fallout was Mac was going to die just himself, I think he would have done it. But the idea, he just couldn't let his parents die. And he felt like he had another course of action, even though it did give up their location. He's like, I can still stop it. He's just, and that's, you know, so often what your heroes do is like, no, we're going to try and do both. We're going to try and make both of these difficult decisions.
Yeah, I mean, Max already given up his daughter, so I guess it was tough for him to give up his parents, but he gave up his position instead, which the Chromacons were very aware of. Let's talk some Chromacons. So the Chromacons, honestly, at this point, what do you people want? Like, my thing is, if you're going to be a villain, I want you to just want something very simple. What do you want? What is it that you actually want?
Yeah, and that's my confusion, is that I'm not sure what they want at this. Oh, sorry, were you?
You guys keep going.
We'll keep going, yeah.
Cool.
I think Postmates is there.
yeah, that's my issue right now. I am loving these episodes. I am loving how each one has a separate time theme and how we're getting the different credits. I love the fact that you can tell that the writers really had fun with this, that they kind of could get away with doing whatever they wanted to because of the end. But I would have liked to have seen more of what it was the Chromacons were going after. To me, right now, I know that there is a greater purpose in all of this because they keep hinting at it. But what is the greater purpose? And we're in episode 5. I feel like we should have had more of a hint of what their end game, long-term goal is. And that's the issue I have, is that we don't know what the stakes are for the Chromacons because we don't know exactly what they're trying to do.
Sure, they want there to not be S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's, I don't know, it's not specific enough. I feel like there are other ways to do this that, we're on like a season-long story, and I think that's part of the problem. I think if it was... you know, if this was a movie, we would have known in the first 15 minutes what was going on. So, you know, watching it week to week, I think that's what makes it frustrating. You know, if you're binging this season a year from now, it probably doesn't seem like it's taking so long. It probably doesn't seem like Fitz has been gone for a year, even though he has.
Mm-hmm. So. And Wilford, the fact that the Krombacons wanted him dead in 31, and then suddenly when Coulson wouldn't strike a deal with the Krombacons, oh, okay, now it's okay for Wilford to be alive.
Yeah.
That's when I said earlier about having whiplash. That's where some of the whiplash is coming from for me.
Yeah, where does this plan go up and down? It's a roller coaster. Of course, we're all on board. We just want it to play out. I'm actually in predictions going to bring up something that I think and I hope comes back to play. Let's talk about Project Insight. What is Project Insight? Christian, you know.
I know. It is classified. But yeah, I mean, obviously, we saw, was that only last week where they tried to, you know, launch it in Nevada, and that didn't work. Maybe those 2 weeks ago. It all runs together. Come on.
I mean, it's all the same day. It's time travel.
Yeah, exactly. it's all jumbled up. So I think that and then the idea that they're focusing it on these very specific targets, like we talked mm-hmm. about, you know, Peggy Carter and Bruce Banner. I by the way, what a great opportunity to have dropped a few more names in there that we didn't get. You know, why not a Stephen Strange? And why was Tony Stark not on there? You know, there's so many of those sort of questions. But, and you know, now I'm just, as I'm talking out loud, like, oh, maybe Mark Ruffalo cameo. So maybe that's why. But I doubt it. So I don't know. I think that the idea that they're trying to just make it happen and they're not worried about the timeline, the fact that it's getting so messy, I think is going to make it ultimately more difficult for them to achieve their goal. I guess we'll see how much longer we stay in the 70s, but I would imagine by the end of next week, we're going to jump to the 80s, or I don't know, maybe Coulson will be wearing some early 90s MC Hammer pants, you know, and maybe,
it'll be like,
yeah,
you'll be like Captain Marvel all over again.
Yes, right. Exactly. So yeah, I don't know. I guess that my short answer is I'm not really sure why we're getting Project Insight at this point, why they feel like it needs to happen now. But I guess that's because of the way that they're doing their time travel in this.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me is obviously for anyone who's not familiar with Project Insight, originally it was 2014 that it went into effect for, you know, just to kind of remind everyone. I kind of appreciate that they're bringing it back, but I also would appreciate, I would appreciate it more if I understood why and why the Krombacons are doing this, why 1 minute they don't want Hydra, why 1 minute they're attacking Hydra to obviously prevent S.H.I.E.L.D., but then the next they're like, oh, no, never mind, we have another tactic and here we're going to do it this way. I think that's my issue is, that I just need to know why, like, what is their end game?
Yeah, we need to find out what their end game is. Of course, the Krombacons, what do you want? What is Project Insight? Of course, we do know that Project Insight is basically having eyes in the sky, ensuring the Earth's safety, quote unquote, but using targeting satellites and using pinpoint laser telemetry, S.H.I.E.L.D. will be able to neutralize hostiles anywhere in the world before they pose a threat. That is a very dangerous thing to have. Of course, we have that now in the real world. And thrown in some Patriot Act, we have what we have today. Let's talk about the concept of the bar. We go to this bar. We see that Freddy's alive. We see the kids. We get May basically ear hustling General Rick Stoner, and we have the conflict happen. What were your thoughts on the bar scene, Rachel?
I love the fact that eventually we do get to see Enoch, but one of the brilliant things for me is how, you know, with any time travel movie, any movie that we're trying to show the progression of time, even if it's not time travel backwards, if it's more just forwards, I love that we do, you know, with the times, we're watching as things change. And so I think to me, that's kind of what I really got out of this and the fact that, you know, at the end, we've got Enoch referencing Terminator, even though he didn't quite use the line the right way. But I am glad that we got Enoch back. I was starting to feel really bad for him.
Yeah. And, you know, seeing the bar scene was actually fun, how different it was, the fact that they were all there for a celebration. And May's interaction with Stoner, I thought was actually very funny. And I did like when he sees her, what ends up, you know, in time being 3 years later. Clearly, he still remembers her very well, because how could you forget Melinda May? But yeah, I think that the bar is a great sort of central, like a focal point throughout the season, because right away it shows you what's different, you know, what's different in the world, what's different with S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's still always swordfish. So I think that they do a good job of sort of giving us a different feel for what's going on at any moment in time.
And I love that we're back in New York. That we're back in a place where Daniel Souza knows, and that he references S.H.I.E.L.D. and that even though it's a different time, I just keep thinking of Agent Carter and just, you know, everything that he's been through and all the things that might not be in the history books that we've seen on the show. And just kind of watching him adapt to this new time.
I, on the other hand, want to know if May was able to read Stoner, then why didn't she read him at the bar and know that he was Hydra or whatever the situation is, and then later was able to do so and then punch him in the face? Why not immediately know, hey, Stoner's not the person we should trust? So you're supposed to feel him out. That's her powers. I have the power of empathy. I can be able to tell people's actual intentions. She should have been able to read that, especially when you become the general. You should have been able to read his evil intentions from a mile away.
My theory is that he was drunk. So his emotions were very difficult. And also, he may have had been very focused on stifling some impure thoughts towards our sweet, dear Melinda May.
I mean, we're waiting to see. And you know, that was definitely interesting to see May play that part up. We haven't seen that in a while. Of course, we get to see Daisy use her powers on the Chromacons. We also see them take someone quickly hostage. That plan came to fruition on its own very quickly. The Chromacons show who they are. Once again, I'm telling you, I can't be the only one that noticed how they were dressed. I cannot be the only person. Because at least in the 30s, they tried to dress like the 30s. In this one, they were just like, Zar and I are just here from the planet Zaron. Here we are. we're just clearly out of place. Let's talk about launch day. So now we jump. They jump. We jump. Everyone jumps. Crisscross jumps. We get to 1976. In 1976, Project Insight is being launched. The Chromacons come up with a plan that's immediate. Basically, let's get them to show their position by taking people hostage. And they learn that. How? I learned it by watching you, Dad. I learned it by watching you. So what did you think about, oh, by the way, really quick, a nod to Enoch's Come With Me If You Want to Live, a Terminator reference where we say, come with me if you want to continue to exist. Mm-hmm. We get that, and he drives off in a car that has apparently great ratings.
Can I just say, like, I loved the line, but I was confused with why he was saying it in the 70s.
Well, I mean, because this Enoch has bounced around in time. So
yeah.
It's very Terminator. He went back. He's saving them. He's basically doing the Terminator job. Yeah. Like, come with me if you want to live. Actually, I thought it was very well placed and funny. And Enoch continues to be the comic relief that we need, especially because it's the only one that happens. With launch day, who saw Deke shooting Freddy? Who saw that coming?
I actually, as much as he was threatening it, I did not think he'd be able to do it.
Christian?
Agreed. I did not expect that. And, you know, people in the chat were just bringing up sort of, did we ever see what was in this envelope? You know, what that image was, whatever. And we didn't. And I think it'll be interesting to see. Maybe we'll talk about that in predictions. But
I saw it coming from a mile away. No, of course not. No one saw this coming. Deke was just like, bet you didn't see that coming, and then went through with it. I mean, because it was And I'll tell you why. Because even in the, hey, would you go back in time and kill baby Hitler? Even in that conversation, the concept is, would you ever basically kill a baby, right? In this situation, even though we do know Freddy's evil, it's killing someone in cold blood. That's where the content arises. It's a very dangerous, slippery slope. And I've never seen this incarnation of Deke. This was a bit ruthless. This is what we expected Freddy to do. We never saw Deke doing this, which, by the way, makes me think this Deke should get Daisy. I don't know. I feel like that's a thing. What are your thoughts on this, Rachel?
So the thing, what I love is that they're playing with the idea of status quo. And I think like it was interesting watching the arc of Deke with him finally recognizing that if he just allows things to stay the same, that this is the problem. And, you know, the Deke, like I didn't expect him to shoot Wilford, but, and that did surprise me. But when I really think about it, and I think about the Deke that we met in season 5, I realize, no, this is a person who had to survive. And yes, this was killing Wilford in cold blood, like you said, Taron. But I feel like now Deke is understanding that sometimes it isn't just about surviving. Sometimes you actually have to be proactive about who you're going to, what you're going to do in this circumstance.
Yeah,
and I mean, I think it was surprising. It is a little bit of a drastic move, but it's not uncharacteristic. I mean, earlier, whatever that previous episode was, where he talked about how he couldn't kill the younger version, was, you know, he's not that guy that we met in the future, but in a lot of ways, I mean, obviously he still is, because he still did it. And I guess he's thinking like, you know, the Chronicom seem to be a step or 10 ahead of us. They're not going to expect us to do this. So let's see what happens. Now, I'm of the feeling that the Chronicons probably exactly expected that this would happen, and that they are not surprised by it. And that might in some way refer to what we see in that was in that envelope.
And that's my problem. That's my frustration, is that the Chronicons will know. I can't wait. During predictions, I'll talk about what I think about that a little bit more with the envelope. But I'm frustrated because the Chronicons already know. It already happened. It was always going to happen that way. And what's surprising to us is not surprising to them.
My problem is, if they know all these things, and if, what is their purpose? Is it just to destroy the Earth? There are a lot of easier ways to destroy the Earth, especially at that time. You're talking about the height of the Cold War. You're talking about coming off of the 50s and the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, we just have a lot of an abundance of nuclear weapons. Why do they have to go through Hydra? Why do they, especially if you're saying, hey, we're going to bring back something that's even more dangerous. That's why I need to know what they want. Maybe we'll find out when it's in that envelope.
Yeah, yes. Plus all you need to do is exploit someone who was known throughout the universe as the destroyer of worlds. You know, so it's like, yeah, if you really want to destroy the world, she's still your gal.
And not to be cynical here, but if they know when and where S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to be, not that we want this to happen, but if they know where the ship's going to show up, they could probably destroy it before the crew does anything at all.
Yeah, so go back and tell Thanos, be like, hey, Thanos, do this. I don't know. All I'm saying is it's fun to watch. We like it. But now, of course, we're here to think. That is what we do. Let's think about Nathan. What did you think about Nathan's character?
Oh, I knew he was going to turn into like some guy that was going to be evil. I feel like we've seen this happen so many times, not just in the show, but in general, in television, where it's the kid who you don't think is going to be bad, and then suddenly he rises as like the main villain. Not that Nathaniel will be the main villain, but now we hear him talking about taking Daisy's powers. And I am very much thinking back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 2, especially, you know, with Daniel Whitehall, but also with the transference of powers. So I feel like this was heavily a callback to the earlier part of the show.
Yeah, but when you meet someone and they seem like such, I don't know, they're basically like a joke and a, you know, just sort of like a guy who, you know, he's like, No, it's not nepotism. I earned it here. You know, it's like very clearly, you're like, yeah, everyone's going to underestimate this guy. And so, yeah, that turn was not surprising. And I think it'll be interesting if we, I mean, there's no reason we wouldn't see Daniel Whitehall at some point, you know, at last check, Reed Diamond is available. So I'm sure he would love to make the appearance.
Yeah, which is both an Agent Carter and an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. callback.
I mean, we got a lot of callbacks, and of course we get this. I feel like Nathaniel gave me some Tom Marvolo Riddle, Lord Voldemort vibes when he was still a kid. Is that creepy, like deep, dark, and the way he, without abandon, took them hostage so quickly without abandon and just ruthlessly took them with him. Even though, technically speaking, let's all act like Daisy's ties weren't tied too hard. No. I saw that, but I didn't say anything, of course. So we'll see what happens as we come to the end of this episode.
Let me just jump in with a comment from the chat. Michael B says, God, it was a pic of Mac's parents in the damn envelope. Really, Michael B, if it was, then why didn't they show it to us? All right.
Exactly.
So I'm just saying, you're so sure. Wouldn't it have made sense for that to be the reveal?
I'm not going to lie. I thought that's what it was too, but who knows what it is.
I thought that's what it was, but then the fact that they didn't show it, no, it can't be. They would have showed it. It would have been obvious at that point.
Oh, we didn't talk about one major thing. What is that in the back of Simmons' neck?
Yeah.
What do you guys
think? I have a theory that she is actually not quite human anymore.
Yes, because we, you know, that there's that allusion from earlier in the season for how long she's been away. I think you're right that she might not actually, you know, she might be some sort of Chronicom construct because, you know, she confides in Enoch that she was having a lot of trouble and sort of figuring it out. And, you know, Sousa wanted all these answers that she just couldn't provide. So, yeah, I think that, you know, my first thought was, oh, okay, is she in some way, you know, working for the Chronicoms? I think it might actually be something that Enoch did, but I feel like that's the most likely scenario. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see how that plays out. Rachel, you were going to say?
No, just that it sounds like, just from the few times we've heard Gemma talk about how long it's been, I almost get the impression that it's been decades that she was apart from the rest of the team. And not in the sense of, she traveled.
She didn't age, though. She didn't age a decade.
Well, which is why I think because she...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're saying the same thing, but go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, that exactly like what Christian was saying, that could be kind of one of the hints that she is no longer quite human.
Yeah.
So we don't know what that thing in the back of her neck is. It's something to make her not human?
Well, I don't know what it is, but if I had to take a guess, it couldn't just be
a skin condition? No, it couldn't just be something when you're clean?
This happened between seasons. She and Daisy went to spring break. All the kids are getting them. I don't know. You guys might not know, but it's very common out there.
I mean, I remember when my sister went away for spring break, came back with the belly button piercing. That was the thing.
Same difference. Exactly. It's just the 2020 version of it.
We don't know what it is, so we'll see how it plays out. Okay. Let's get into some concepts. Let's play Agents of Should really quick, our special segment where what should an agent have done at a particular moment? Christian.
Unpopular opinion, Max should have killed his parents.
Not as unpopular as you think.
Well, it depends on your parents, I guess.
Rachel.
When Daisy and Daniel were at that spot and they were trying to, you know, kind of get into the base and Daisy was working her sky magic. I say sky because you know what I mean. I feel like they should have been a little more cautious of their surroundings, and I kind of got the sense that the fact that Daniel was a little preoccupied with her phone and with this, you know, with just the system in general, that it was going to come to bite them because they weren't paying attention to things around them. And that I don't know that Daisy would have been able to fight against whatever it was that Nathaniel shot at them, but if they had been a little more aware or if someone was watching out the way they should have been, they might have avoided it.
I'm gonna have to say Quake needs to use her freaking powers. I don't know what's going on with her just not using her powers.
Yeah,
let's start using, like, Quake, you are the destroyer of worlds. You can't quake things? Let's start quaking things. How about we quake things? Okay. And by the way, I didn't even talk about Yo-Yo. I don't feel like talking about Yo-Yo. I don't need to talk about Yo-Yo. Yo-Yo needs to get her crap together too. Okay. Get your stuff together, Quake. Start using your powers. That's what I need to see happen.
Right now, she's just Yo. It's like you drop the string and it just drops down on the floor. It does not spring back up.
She even ran super slow to the door. Like, I can run faster than that normally, and I don't have your superpower. Just run. She was like running in slow motion. Let's get into some news and gossip, shall we? Boom. Boom. That's right. Screen Rant has an amazing article. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7 teases the Inhumans and Daisy's mom. So we're going to be talking about that because we've been waiting to see Daisy's mom. We know about the Carter family. We know about the Koenig family. But one of the best ones is the concept of Inhumans, something that's a huge project that we've all been waiting for. And we get to see Daisy's mom. And that all comes out in, of course, A Trout in the Milk. You get to see the Zephyr finding itself in the 70s. And we get that Winter Soldier nods, we get a lot of Carter nods, so we're all of this is basically culminating into Inhumans and Daisy's mom. Go read that on our friends on Screen Rant. They talk about it, they're great about it. Let's get into some predictions, shall we?
Yes, let's. I don't know why I thought we were going to get the old sound effects. We don't get them this way, but
are the sound effects. Christian, what do you think happened?
Well, I've already talked about how I think Putty slash Patrick Warburton is indeed. Oh, Ryan says that they do play. We just don't hear them. So that's on me. My bad. I think that Stoner is not just a stoner. He is also an agent of Hydra. And I think that everything has played out the way the Chronicoms expected. They did reveal their location. They did think that Deke was going to pull the trigger. So, and you know, if you saw the coming attractions for next week, it looks like we could have Coulson die yet again this season. So I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better. And I also think the streak of Fitz-less episodes will continue, and we will not get him next week.
I mean, maybe, what would happen if we just never got Fitz again? Rachel.
Oh, man. I'd be so upset by that.
Oh, man. The series finale episode of this show is going to be, if we never see Fitz this season, I don't know. I might skip that show because I'll hear some very rough language out of Rachel.
Yeah, you would. You would. I'm just going to say one thing for the sake of time. With Daniel Sousa, my theory, he's going to go into the future. He's going to end up in 2011, circa eight, you know, Avengers, first Avengers movie, and he is going to end up, I don't know if you guys remember this, I'm sure you do, but the actor, his name is Enver, he was actually in Avengers as a very minor background role as a cop. So I have a feeling that my theory is that that actually is Daniel Sousa that we saw, but he was living out the rest of his life in 2011.
Interesting. Interesting to watch that. This is what my theory is going to be. Remember season 3 when there was a guy who was the brother of the senator who was dropped in the water, and we just dropped the whole metahuman thing. You would become this outer shield.
Like, I remember it now that you mention it.
Let's bring that kid back. We always wanted to know what happened to that guy, right? Talk about an Easter egg. If they bring him back and somehow he has time travel powers, and that's how we fix it at the end of the season. By the way, if I called that now, I'm a genius. I just want to call that. and honestly, I have nothing to lose because if it doesn't happen, we're like, yo, that was a long shot anyway. But if it does happen, that is your 1,000-to-1 right there. Your 1,000-to-1 that he comes back and he's the key to the whole thing at the end. I hope that plays out. Until then, where can we find the keys to your door, Christian? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. You can also find me Thursdays in the morning, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, over on the Popcorn Talk for Marvel Movie News. Where you can find me there. At Tuesdays on AfterBuzz for the Trump Report. Tehran was on a few weeks ago, which was we had a great conversation there. And coming soon on AfterBuzz will be the Twilight Zone After Show Season 2 dropped this morning, all 10 episodes. So look for us soon.
That's what's up, Christian. Thank you for your itinerary. Rachel, where can we find you?
I didn't tell you what I'm having for breakfast yet.
It kind of did.
Rachel? You can find me anywhere on social media at either at Rachel Radner or at Rach Goodman, which is all my acting stuff. The former is all my writing stuff. You can find me on the AfterBuzz Snowpiercer show on Mondays. And yeah, that's it.
Well, you can find me Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 3:14 p.m. No, find me at I Am Tehran all across the board. I-A-M-T-E-H-R-A-N, of course, hosting and paneling a slew of other AfterBuzz after shows, because all of your favorite TV shows are my favorite TV shows too. Thank you so much to the chat for keeping it alive. You know you are our favorite part of the show. You are as much, if not more so, a part of this show as we are. Give us those 5-star ratings on iTunes. Comment, chat, spread the word. Just don't spread corona. We will see you next week if we don't get lost in time on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.